It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Another series, another road trip, another ass-whooping, another lost week for the New York Mets. Welcome to another edition of the Rico Bronya. The Mets lose 2 out of 3 to the Philadelphia Phillies. That on the heels of losing 2 out of 3 to the Cincinnati Reds. They go 2-4 on this road trip, and they drop back to 9 games under .500. And it felt as if every game, not only in this series against Philadelphia, but on this road trip, which included Cincinnati, went the exact same way. Give up runs in the first inning, give up runs in the second inning, put yourself in a massive hole. Know that your offense is not going to be able to come out of it. If you're waiting for some great rally or great comeback or the victory you put on the wall as the game that's going to turn this season around, that was not going to happen. And it continued in Philadelphia. It's the way this trip started in Cincinnati. And really, it comes down to the same thing. Their starting pitching is bad. It's bad. I mean, outside of Nolan McClain, who did a very good job in his one start, and Sean Manaea did a decent job, the starting pitching is non-competitive. What David Peterson did on Sunday is non-competitive. The garbage we saw from Freddie Peralta on Saturday is unacceptable. So when you take the mix of bad starting pitching, which the Mets have, an offense that isn't going to put up 10 runs a game, is usually going to struggle to get to 2, 3, or 4 runs, a defense that will kick the ball all over the place, well, you got the makings of this. I mean, that's a bad team. And as we sit here in late June, it's kind of like what we knew in early June. And it's kind of like what we knew in late May and early May and late April and mid-April. This continues to just be a bad baseball team in a lost year. Despite how lost it is, we will do our best to break down these 3 games. The win on Thursday, and then obviously just the horrendous losses, the embarrassing losses on Saturday and Sunday. I've said this a lot about the Jets over the years, where it's bad enough to lose at 1 o'clock on a Sunday, but when you get embarrassed on Monday Night Football or you get embarrassed on Thursday Night Football, it makes it worse. You'd rather just get embarrassed in your normal time slot. You don't need the country laughing at you. And on Saturday night with John Smoltz and Joe Davis on the call, the Mets embarrassed themselves. I mean, Saturday night was just an absolute ass-whooping embarrassment. It was, as Joe Davis likes to say, oh, the Mets. Because that's what they were. It was a non-competitive, non-entertaining Saturday night ass-whooping. And then on Sunday, our real debut on NBC, because I know opening day was on NBC, but the first Sunday night installment where we get John Crook on the Philly side, John Franco on the Mets side, Jason Benetti, who's a fine, solid announcer, what happens? Before you're comfortable in your seat on Father's Day, they're losing 5-0, and no one in their right mind thought they were coming back. And I think that's probably the worst part about this team, because I never give up on a baseball game. It's part of why baseball is great. There is no clock. I mean, there's a pitch clock, but you know what I mean. You can always come back. And when you're down 5-0 and the Mets scored a run in the third inning to make it 5-1, like, reasonable teams will come back. Not even championship teams, not even great teams, but reasonable teams will come back and win a game despite being down 5-0 against Zach Wheeler in the third inning. But not this team. Right now, they're bad at everything. So we'll go in chronological order. We'll recap all 3 games. We'll start off with the victory on Thursday. We will eventually name a Rico I'm the Man Right Now star of the series. We'll name a net negative. We will read your emails at thericob@gmail.com. And we will continue to get through what has been, let's just face it, a bad season. And when you get to Father's Day and it's still a bad season, and you're a couple of weeks from 4th of July and it's still a bad season, I think we're all facing the reality that this is not going to turn. But Thursday was our positive. Thursday was the day in which Juan Soto hit a couple of solo home runs off of Aaron Nola. Juan Soto also made probably one of the great catches we've seen him make as a Met this season in the third inning, trying to back up Sean Manaea after Sean Manaea struck out Kyle Schwarber and he reached first base on a pass ball and then got to second base
on an error. Like, it was just a complete mess of a play in which Francisco Alvarez commits a pass ball, which should be an error. It's one weird scoring glitch that I think Major League Baseball has. Like, you commit a pass ball, the run will be unearned, but it won't be called an error. It's an error. Either way, Francisco Alvarez gave you all of that in the third inning on a rare strikeout of Kyle Schwarber, and Bryce Harper hit a ball down the left field line, and Juan Soto made a great play. Thursday night, in a lot of ways, was the Juan Soto game. He hits the two home runs. I know they're both solo home runs, but like I've said, even when I've criticized Juan for the solo home runs, they're still home runs. They're still important. The first one gave them an early 1-0 lead. The second one made a 2-1 game, 3-1. So they got a little pop out of Juan Soto, and they got what I would say was an average performance out of Sean Manaea. Right now, Sean Manaea probably looks a lot better than the reality of him, because you can compare him to David Peterson and you can compare him to Freddy Peralta, who had the dud on Saturday we'll get to, and you can compare him to Kodai Senga. But in a lot of ways, Manaea, while he wasn't great on Thursday night, was at least able to keep them in the game and pitch into the sixth inning. So he ends up giving up the run early when he hits. I mean, you start a game off by hitting Trey Turner when you're ahead 0-2. Though it did knock Turner out for the rest of the game, gives up a base hit to Kyle Schwarber and put the first two guys on base, and I thought it was going to be a disaster. And luckily, he got Bryce Harper to ground out. He had a huge caught stealing when, for some reason, Bryce Harper is running on the Brandon Marsh strikeout to get out of the first inning. So the Phillies made Metsian mistakes to help Manaea get through the first inning, but he gets through that leadoff triple in the second inning, which was impressive. And even after Juan Soto makes that great play in the third, unfortunately gives up the RBI double to Alec Bohm. But for the most part, Manaea was solid. He was okay. Again, when you have a low bar, that's where 5 1/3 innings, 6 hits, 3 runs becomes okay. But we saw the Met offense do a little bit. We saw Soto hit the 2 home runs. We saw A.J. Ewing take advantage of the Aaron Nola error with an RBI double. And we were involved on Thursday night in a tight 3-3 game in which it was going to be determined by the bullpen. And Carlos Mendoza made a decision in the seventh inning, which I'm pretty sure, if the Ricoers are going to be honest, you didn't love the move. You didn't love pinch hitting for A.J. Ewing, who had already had 2 hits in this game, and going with Eric Wagaman. And it's not a knock on Eric Wagaman. Wagaman's been fine as a bench piece. But when the Mets have 2 on and 2 out in the seventh inning of a tie game, and A.J. Ewing is the future, he's one of the positives in what has been a lost season. There aren't many, but certainly one of them is watching the young players. Pinch hitting for A.J. Ewing was not a move most Ricoers like. Now, I'll be honest with you, I was conflicted. Now, I will give you my conflicting thoughts on pinch hitting for Ewing. If this is about, and we're not there yet, but if this is about next season, if this is about evaluating young players, if this is about just, hey, we just want to see the future, then you let A.J. Ewing hit against a left-hander like Jose Alvarado. By the way, every time I say his name now, I think of the Knicks. I mean, I remember Jose Alvarado, the pitcher, and then you had Jose Alvarado, the basketball player, but I thought more of Jose Alvarado, the pitcher. But now it's Jose Alvarado, the basketball player, the free agent to be potentially of the New York Knicks. Either way, I digress. If this is about the future, or this is just about evaluating the young players on this roster, then yeah, you let A.J. Ewing hit. But if you're trying to win a baseball game, and in the middle of June you still are, despite my negativity or your negativity or what have you, then Eric Wagaman is actually the better option. So I can't kill Mendoza for pinch hitting Ewing for Wagaman. If this is September 15th and the Mets are dead and buried, then I'd say screw it, let Ewing hit. But this was June 18th. And as negative as we all may be, you're still trying to win games. And so from that perspective, Carlos Mendoza made the right move. And Eric Wagaman delivered with what turned out to be the game-winning RBI single. In the text chat, I have the Mets chat, as we call it, There was heavy criticism going on as Waggaman came up. And I think that criticism comes from, hey, AJ Ewing is one of the things we're excited about. Why take him out of the game? And I get that sentiment. That's why I say I'm conflicted. Like, if AJ Ewing got the chance to face Jose Alvarado in the seventh inning of game one of this series, I'm not coming on the Rico Rip and Mendy for letting him hit. I'm not. I'll be honest with you. But Mendy made the right move. And Eric Waggaman delivered. And then you get a moment. And this is where, again, I'll be 85% real or negative, however you want to define it. Most of the time here on the Rico, it's mostly negative because that's what the season's been. But I always try to find where the season can turn. Doesn't mean I believe the season can turn, but that's the hopeless romantic baseball fan that I am. The Marcus Semien at bat in the seventh inning, after the Mets had just taken the lead, had all those sense of an at bat that really can change things. He strikes out. The inning is over. And no one in their right mind is confident at 4-3 in the bottom of the seventh inning that the Mets are going to get nine outs without the Phillies scoring a run. But the strikeout gets, I don't know if it was overruled by Chad Whitson or if, I was going to call him Brandon Walsh, but Brian Walsh, the home plate umpire, just changed his mind. But the ball appeared to bounce. It appeared to hit the ground. And so Simeon's given a brand new life. Instead of a strikeout, it's a foul ball. The at-bat continues, and then he strokes a two-run triple. And those are the kinds of things that usually goes against the Mets. Those are the kinds of things we're lamenting. And instead, it turns into this very significant moment, at least in this game. A two-run triple from Marcus Semien when he had just struck out, for all intents and purposes, 30 seconds earlier. And instead of it being 4-3, it's 6-3. It felt like it could have been a significant moment. Met bullpen does a great job. It's the one positive you can find in this team, that after Manaea gets the first out of the sixth inning, and I like that move by Mendy too, allowing him to face Brandon Marsh to steal another out despite the pitch count being at, I think it was about 91 through five. So traditionally, you would have figured Manaea's done, but you know what? Let's steal a lefty-lefty matchup against Brandon Marsh. Great. He strikes him out. I was even thinking, you know what? Screw it. Let me see if I could steal another out from him. But Waskar Brazoban, who's been great all year, gets the final two outs of the sixth, gets an out in the seventh inning. A.J. Minter, who has sneakily done a really good job since he was activated from the IL, gets Justin Crawford and Kyle Schwarber out. Luke Weaver, I mean, my God, Luke Weaver's making a bid for the All-Star team. You know, the All-Star rosters are going to be announced. I think Juan Soto should be one, and I think Luke Weaver could be another. Not that this team is deserving of a million All-Stars, but if you go up and down this roster and say who deserves to be an All-Star, I think Juan Soto is one. I think Luke Weaver may be the other. I mean, think about it. He's facing Bryce Harper, Alec Boehm, and Brandon Marsh. He strikes them all out with that three-run lead. And then you get the ninth inning, where Devin Williams has been pretty much good this season. Like, I think his ERA, I've said this before, is very deceiving. Above five. He's had a couple of bad performances, but for the most part, has done the job. He's only blown one save this season. And then he had the two other losses. He came into tie games and took L's. But those are really been few and far between. He comes in, strikes out Edmundo Sosa, walks Bryson Stott, gets JT Realmuto on a ground ball fielder's choice, in which the Mets are moving in slow motion on turning double plays, whether it was Bo Bichette and Marcus Semien, or it was Zach Short who came into the game and Marcus Semien. Again, the Mets are mostly bad at everything, except maybe the bullpen. That's the positive. You need a sundial to time how they're turning these double plays. It's freaking ridiculous. And I know the Philly postgame show went off on the Met defense and how much they suck and all that. They're not wrong. We may not want to hear it from them because they're clowns, but who could deny how bad the defense is? And then you get Bo Bichette now playing third base on a routine ground ball to third, and he throws it away. For some reason, the official scorer called it an infield hit. It was not an infield hit. And that could have been where Devin Williams imploded. That could have been the moment that turned what should have been a victory against the Phillies, a second straight win, a game one victory. It could have turned it on its head. And after he gives up the RBI single to Justin Crawford, Devin Williams got lucky. I'll call it like it is. He got lucky. He got Kyle Schwarber to just miss one, line one right at Carson Bench in right field. And the Mets escaped. And they really did escape. Because that ninth inning came so close to being just an absolute implosion. The defense by Bo Bichette, Devin Williams giving up hard contact. But they won. And, you know, I try to say this on the Rico, even in series in which they only win one game and they lose two. Beggars can't be choosers, right? They won. I'm not complaining, even though I am complaining. I will read some of your emails, though. They feature some complaints. Like Chaim, who writes, "Hi, Evan. I'm writing this right after Devin Williams bent but didn't break. As Justin Crawford came up to the plate, I thought to myself that Brooks really should be warming up right now. Crawford looked awful against lefties all night, and with Schwarber and Harper on deck, I know Devin's our closer, but he hasn't earned my complete trust yet, and I felt better with that lefty option." It's an interesting thought. I did not have that in the ninth inning because Devin Williams just is your closer. Like, you're going to trust him until the game is blown. I also think with Raley, you're always very careful with him. He does pitch on back-to-backs. We've seen him, but he had pitched the night before. He also hasn't looked as incredibly sharp as he was over the first month and a half of the season. But that's not the reason they don't make a move like that. The reason they don't make a move like that is because whether you trust him or not, Devin Williams is your closer. And you're not going to play matchups in the ninth inning when you still have a lead. That inning was about Bo Bichette not making a play he's got to make. Or it's even about the double play combination of Zach Short and Marcus Semien. Zach had come into the game, like I mentioned, to play shortstop. Like, the way they tried to turn the double play against JT Realmuto was just way too slow. Jack writes, "Guys, I hate to be a Debbie Downer right after Marcus Semien's two-out, two-run triple, but Brett Beatty's at-bat perfectly depicted the horrific approach of this Met offense and why they're so inconsistent. You have Jose Alvarado and an eighth of an inch away from escaping a jam, then on the very next pitch, gives up the two-run triple. Now when Beatty comes up, his thought is, I just gave up two runs, let me get a strike over. Beatty should be sitting dead red, saying, I'm going to rip this down the line for a double and drive in the fourth run of the inning. Instead, he stares at it and proceeds to strike out. The approach and lack of situational awareness drives me crazy. It's the little things that make great teams, as you know. Anyhow, thank you, Marcus Semien, and let's go Mets." Yeah, Beatty had a bad at-bat against Alvarado right after that. He took that first pitch down the middle. He ends up striking out. It was still a very good inning. I mean, they score three runs on the top of the seventh inning. You're up 6-3. You feel good about yourself, but sure. I think it's certainly a fair critique to say the Met offense could have made it even bigger. Couple of other things from that seventh inning, because that was the inning that won them the game. I have to give credit to people that most in the Rico audience don't want to give credit to, like Mark Vientos. Mark Vientos pinch hit for Jared Young in that seventh inning, had a really good at-bat. Remember, this all happened with Carson Bench standing on second and then third base, and he drew a walk, and that was right before Wagaman was sent up as the pinch hitter to get the RBI single. So, little bit of credit, as much as people may not want to give it to Mark Vientos for the at-bat against Alvarado where he drew the walk, setting up the inning. It was a good win. I mean, there were things that pissed you off like I just went through, but they beat the Phillies. And I said this on the Rico on Wednesday, the previous episode, whatever episode we're up to, just subtract it by one, that the Thursday game was really important to get because of the pitching matchups on Saturday and Sunday, because you're facing Christopher Sanchez, because you're facing Zach Wheeler, especially on Sunday with the idea of David Peterson pitching, whether it was as a starter or as a bulk guy, obviously he ended up starting, that the game the Mets needed to win to avoid disaster was the Thursday game. And how many times have I said that now this season? Even though this season is a disaster, it feels like every series there's the, well, they avoided disaster, like the Cincinnati series. Great, they won the third game. They avoided disaster. or this Philly series. They won the first game. They avoided disaster. I guess technically they did. 0-6 would have been worse than 2-4. But this is a disaster. This season is a disaster. Now, the good news is when you head out to Citi Field and they have a 7-game homestand coming up, you can knock one out of the park and raise the apple with Takara Chuhai, a sparkling cocktail that blends real shochu spirits with the delicious flavors of fruits locally grown in Japan. It's available at Citi Field in Fuji Apple, of course, white peach and lemon. Let's get to game two of this series. So I will give you a personal note. On Saturday night, I saw Jon Stewart live. That's right, Jon Stewart. I wouldn't even say he's doing a comedy tour. He's not. He only went to two places. He was in Hartford, Connecticut on Friday night. And on Saturday night, he was at Tanglewood, which is this outdoor amphitheater in Massachusetts. So I went to see Jon Stewart. I was very excited to see him. Big Jon Stewart fan. I haven't watched him a lot over the last couple of years, but certainly during the heyday of The Daily Show. Very smart, very funny. I walk into Tanglewood and they take your phones, which is, I guess, pretty customary when you see a comedian that they take your phones because they don't want you to film anything. I was the happiest person that they took my phone because on a Saturday night, out with my wife, out with my parents, I didn't want to be spoiled by the Met game. Like, my plan is I'm going out. When I get home at 10, 11 o'clock at night, I'll watch the Met game. I'll score the Met game. I've done this many times throughout my life, but it's always a challenge when your phone is with you, because if you ever check your phone, there's always a risk of being spoiled. So the fact that they were taking our phones was the greatest thing in the world, because now the guy next to me can't accidentally spoil the Met game. Not that they would. I'm in freaking Tanglewood. I'm in Massachusetts. But when they took the phones, I was the happiest guy. Everybody else was freaking out. I'm like, this is fantastic. What a spoil-free zone this is. So John was brilliant. I get back. It's about 10:30 at night. I set up my scorecard. I'm like, ah, here we go. Little Mets-Phillies action. Little Freddy Peralta, Christopher Sanchez. And this is where I'm an idiot. Did I expect to win on Saturday night? No. No, Christopher Sanchez is having a Cy Young season. I certainly didn't, you know, when I'm looking at the Met lineup and I'm like, oh, let me write this down. Okay, Benj, Bichette, Soto, Simeon's batting cleanup. Oh, my God. Eric Wagaman, Alvarez 6, Vientos 7, Zach Shorts in the lineup. No, I did not have, like, confidence the Mets were going to win this game. But I did not. Call me crazy, and maybe I'm crazy. I didn't think they'd be down 11-0 after 3. What do I know? I didn't think Freddy Peralta, who I've been disappointed in, who some of us have been disappointed in, I did not think Freddy Peralta would proceed to give up 10 freaking runs, including a couple of bombs. One to Bryce Harper, one to Kyle Schwarber. I didn't see that coming. I didn't see Freddy Peralta, who is five-inning Freddy or five-and-fly Freddy, or non-A's Freddy, whatever you want to call him, I did not see that coming. I mean, that was horrendous. And I want to play you a clip of Freddy Peralta before we dive deep into this just horrendous baseball game. Because Freddy Peralta, if you think 2 2/3 innings, 10 hits, 10 runs is bad, he actually said something after the game that really pissed me off. Like, it bothered me. So I'll set it up for you, and you'll hear Freddie's answer. Freddy Peralta was asked, hey, how's the season going for you? Like, how would you define your 2026 season so far with the Mets? And this is what he said.
I think I've been a little inconsistent, but I have time to be better.
All right, you've been a little inconsistent. Okay, I'll give you that. You've been a little inconsistent. Like, there's been some good. There's been mostly bad. But you don't have time. Don't tell me how much time you have, because the Mets traded two prospects for you. Granted, those two prospects haven't panned out yet for the Brewers, but they traded two prospects for you. You get to start once every 5 or 6 days, so you're not an everyday player where you're out there all the time. And the team is 9 games under .500 now. And when you take the mound, They need you to pitch well. And you say you have time. How much time do you have? If July 31st, or in this case, August 2nd, August 3rd, is going to be the cutoff, then you got about a month and a week. How many starts is that really? You don't have that much time. The team doesn't have that much time. We've said all year, oh, it's early. It's right in front of them, to quote Aaron Boone. They could always turn it around. Not you. You got a handful of starts left to turn it around. And you just pulled off like an all-time bad start. Like, there are bad starts, and then there's 2 2/3 innings, 10 hits, 10 run starts. So I didn't like to hear Freddie Peralta after the game telling me how much time he's got. I mean, this was just horrendous all the way around. He gives up the home run to Bryce Harper early. They're down 1-0. He gives up the RBI double to JT Realmuto, an RBI double to Justin Crawford, who looks just like his dad. It's crazy. He gives up the bomb to Schwarber. He gives up a double to Bryce Harper. You get the garbage defense by Marcus Semien, who made that horrendous throw, just mix in some bad defense with the horrible offense. He's given up batting practice, back-to-back doubles. And all the while, I'm watching this game. Obviously, I'm delayed. I'm hours after the fact. And I'm asking, hey, Carlos, Carlos, not a lot's left in your bullpen. There isn't many arms to choose from. Totally get that. But at what point do you say to yourself, boy, Freddie Peralta's got nothing. Maybe I should take him out. Like, at what point do you start to think that? I was thinking that. I'll tell you exactly the moment where I said, boy, I really got to get him out of the game, is when he walked Justin Crawford with two outs in the third inning. He had already given up. Let's see, they were down 4-0, 5-0. They're down 7-0. It is now 7-0 in the bottom of the third inning, and Freddie Peralta walks Justin Crawford, and he leaves him in. That would be I would have taken him out three batters earlier. But that was the moment of, come on, Carlos. I mean, what are we doing here? And I know what I'm about to say, and I know your response. So I'm going to say what I'm going to say and then argue with the response, which is that Carlos Mendoza should have been fired 12 times this season. And he still may be. Who the hell knows? Maybe at some point Steve Cohen wakes up. Maybe it's before we know. Maybe it's Monday. Who the hell knows? And wakes up and says, all right, David Stearns, you got to do something. And the easy argument is, but Evan, it's not Mendy's fault. It's David Stearns' fault too. I know that. I know that. We all know that it's everybody's fault and it's David Stearns' fault mostly. But the manager's done a terrible job too. And just because it's someone else's fault, more so than your fault, doesn't mean you get to be scot-free here. But Freddie Peralta was left in for his ass-whooping way too long. If you wanted to punish him, and maybe some Met fans out there, maybe some Ricoers out there are like, you know what, just punish this guy. We're not coming back. We're not winning this game anyway. Instead of burning the bullpen, just let Freddie Peralta get his ass kicked. If that's really where you want to go, fine. It's tough to argue it because they were never coming back. And bullpen-wise, where were you going to go? I mean, Tobias Myers was the only guy that was going to come in and eat up innings, which is what he did for 2 1/3 innings, even though he sucked too, giving up another home run to Kyle Schwarber. But I do think at some point when your starting pitcher doesn't have it, you should probably take him out of the game. You probably should. Now, let's get back to the defense because I just can't get enough of how crappy this team is. So we mentioned the Marcus Semien error. That one's obvious on the infield hit that he threw away. How about Zach Short on the JT Realmuto double in the second inning? Let me take you back to the second inning. It's still a game. This is the moments where it's a baseball game. It's 1-0 Phillies. They have a runner on first and one out, and JT Realmuto lines a double down the left field line. Alec Boehm is being sent home. And I think the Mets have a real chance to throw him out. And who knows if they throw him out, now there's two outs and a runner on second. Maybe they get out of the inning. You never know. And now it's still a 1-0 game. Zach Short Why is Zach Short on the team? Now, I assume, I'm going to make an assumption that Zach Short is on the team because he's a capable defensive shortstop and they need a backup. And they deemed Short as a better option than Vidal Brujan. Zach Short drops an easy relay throw from Juan Soto. If Zach Short catches the baseball and makes a somewhat accurate throw to the plate, there's a very solid chance Alec Boehm is out at the plate. And instead, Zach Short, like he's playing Little League, boxes the ball around, cannot catch it. There is no throw home. The little things. The little things. When you're Zach Short and you're on a major league roster despite hitting 150, you better do the little things. And he didn't. And that's very common with this team. It's a common trait that the little things don't happen. Now, on the other side, Luis Torrens came up in the top of the second inning with the Mets down 1-0 after they put like this mini rally together. Eric Wagaman used a challenge in the second inning. It turned out to be very important because instead of him striking out, it turned into a ball and he ended up drawing a walk. And then AJ Ewing, Francisco Alvarez got a hit and they had a shot. It was second and third, two outs in a 1-0 game. And Luis Torrens hits this ball right back up the middle. And Bryson Stott makes this great diving play. Instead of the Mets going up 2-1, which they should have, because that ball was up the middle, they do the little things. They make that play. Bryson Stott did that a couple of times. Or in the fifth inning. Who was playing shortstop? I guess Trey Turner was back out there. Made a great diving play against Juan Soto when the Mets had a chance for potentially a big inning. The little things. The Mets don't do those things. If Zach Short makes that throw home instead of boxing a relay throw, the game could have played out differently. But instead, it plays out the way it does. They're down 11-0 in the fourth inning. 11-0 in the fourth inning. That's what we're sitting through. And then Zach Short actually does, I guess I should give him credit. He comes in and pitches in the bottom of the eighth inning. What's so crazy about the position player pitching is that for a long time, the Mets never had a position player pitch. You could look it up. Bill Pakoda. Bill freaking Pakoda was the first position player to ever pitch for the New York Mets, and that happened in the early 1990s. I remember when it happened. And then after that, we saw Matt Franco pitch a few times. We saw Desi Relaford pitch a few times. And now it happens all the time. I mean, I've lost count with the amount of position players that have pitched. And I give you something to look up because I'm not looking it up. Maybe Dan will, the archivist of the Rico or Evan and Tiki. But Zach Short came in to pitch on Saturday for the Mets. And Max Schumann came in to pitch position player for the Yankees on Saturday. Is that the first time ever the Mets and the Yankees both had position players pitch on the same day? That's got to be a record. Anyhow, I got a lot of Rico emails from game two. So why don't we go through it? We'll start with Jason in Harlem who writes, "Whatever happened to the Mets pitching lab? For whatever reason, the phrase popped back into my mind watching Freddy Peralta's implosion against the Phillies. Seems like these days the Mets are where pitchers of all levels go to discover new career low performances. Please don't let this new version of the pitching lab get their hands on Nolan McClain. Thanks for the Rico. We need it now more than ever." Nicole writes, "Evan, shall we consider this game, losing 15-3 to the Phillies, the death rattle of the 2026 season? Just when I think it cannot possibly get worse, it does. And we don't even have Gary, Keith, and Ron to soothe our souls tonight. It's time to scrap the entire team, fire David Stearns, and start over from scratch. I truly don't think their roster can make it out of this hole. And worse, how do you rebuild with this kind of morale? Awful waste of a season. Can't believe I have season tickets. It's like heading to the coal mines for every game I attend. Big fan of the podcast. Thanks for sticking with us. I could use a Rico after every sad game at this point." Should we start doing that? As this season gets more lost than lost, should we just do Ricos after every single game? Jalen writes, Hey, Evan, big fan of the Rico, Evan and Tiki. We appreciate it. Drove to Philly with my family Saturday to catch the Freddy Peralta fiasco. What a disgrace. Kind of like you, I've begun scoring the games that I attend. Started with the Mets-Marlins series in Miami in late May. For the first time, I gave up after the third inning disaster. Freddie's time is done here, and I would gladly drive him myself to wherever he's traded to. Every move that the genius David Stearns has made has blown up in his face. The season is over. Can you please shout out my dad and brother, Will and Alex, all big fans? Thank you, and stay strong, brother. I'm trying to stay strong. Well, shout out to your dad and your brother, Will and Alex. Hopefully you enjoyed your trip to Philadelphia. I can't even get through that. Hopefully you had a good time in Philadelphia. Imagine that. And I'm going to be doing this too. I am going to a singular road game in a couple of weeks. I'm taking my family to Niagara Falls. And coincidentally, the Mets are in Toronto for a three-game series beginning on the following Monday. And we're going to go up. First time I've ever seen Sky Dome Rogers Center. I've never been in that ballpark. One of the rare East Coast stadiums I haven't been to. And when I walk in there, I mean, there's a chance they're going to give up 11 runs in the first three innings too. And I'm going to look around and say, wow, okay, so this was my one experience up in Toronto, and the game's over in the third inning. So I feel for you, especially around those people. Hey, Evan, this is from Sam. Sam writes, a mid-series note. I picked this up just from my Mets membership. It really makes you pause, even though it feels many times Juan Soto doesn't come through in the clutch. But the numbers speak for themselves. Soto currently leads all qualified NL hitters with a 980 OPS, Ohtani second. Mets record when Soto starts this season, 31-27 compared to 3-14 when he doesn't. The Mets average 4.55 runs per game when he's in the lineup versus 2.47 runs when he isn't. We're lucky to have him, not just him, but it makes everyone around them better. That's the bottom line. I think that criticizing Soto's lack of big hits, which is fair, doesn't mean any of us don't recognize that he is a great player and that the Mets are better when he's in the lineup. I think we all acknowledge that. But simultaneously, he's lacked a big hit. It just has been the case. But he is far from their biggest issue, as we all know. Alex writes, hey, Evan, I, like you, was very tepid about trading two of our top five prospects for a rental pitcher in Peralta. But I said, screw it. Let's win some games this year. At this point, our season has already imploded, and we can't even get the bittersweetness of having a decent trade deadline at this point. I mean, the guy we dealt Jet and Sprout for wouldn't even fetch a random dude in rookie ball somewhere. Fair to call Freddy Peralta the worst Stearns acquisition ever, especially when factoring in what we had to give up? Well, I would say no to that. I mean, I guess in terms of where the guys were valued in Jet Williams and Brandon Sproat, sure. But we need to be fair. If those guys don't turn into anything, and we have a long ways away before we know that, but if they don't turn into anything, then I don't think we can look at the value that he gave up as some kind of monster negative. Sure, you could have traded it for something else, but what was the something else? And I disagree about this. And we will get there, I promise you. And I'll start to bring up the trade deadline in about a week and a half. I've been holding off on it because there's still a season to discuss. But I think when you get to July, it's at least a fair discussion. So we'll start to get there real soon. As bad as Peralta was on Saturday, as bad as his numbers now look, I still think there will be a decent market for him. Doesn't mean I think the Mets are going to get back the prospect rankings of what they gave up in Brandon Sproat and Jet Williams, but I don't think his value has been completely wasted. Now, if he's hurt, different story. If it comes out that, oh, by the way, yeah, he gave up 10 runs on Saturday, but he's also not feeling well, or there's something physically wrong, then yes, that would change the trade deadline and the value of his. But I think Freddy Peralta still has a resume that will get the Mets something of value back. Sunday night, NBC, Zach Wheeler versus David Peterson. It feels like the biggest mismatch in the world. And it turned out to be. I mean, sometimes things live up to the hype. Let's start with David Peterson. He is just not pitchable anymore. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, well, he retired the last eight batters he faced. I'm not finding the positive of the way David Peterson closed his performance. I would have let him start the fifth, though. That is one disagreement. His pitch count was 79. He had retired 8 in a row. I'm trying to squeeze another inning out of David Peterson. That I'll rip Mendy for. But when you come out and you are immediately falling behind hitters like he did with Trey Turner, like he did with Kyle Schwarber, like he even did with Bryce Harper, but he was able to fight back and strike out Bryce Harper on a pitch that was bounced, you are putting yourself in a position to have bad luck affect you. When you walk the first two hitters in the first inning, especially a lineup like this, I don't want to hear about the soft contact with Alec Bohm or the soft contact with Edmundo Sosa. You put yourself in a spot where soft contact was going to F you because you walked the first two guys. So let's start there with David Peterson. He gives up the two runs. He's not helped out by that just absolutely atrocious play by Brett Beatty. Brett Beatty has done everything he could to win the net negative award. He wants that net negative award. He's begging for the net negative award, but there's always somebody else who sucks more that keeps Brett Beatty from winning the Rico Bronya net negative. But that pathetic throw on the infield hit by Alec Bohm, that needs to be investigated, because what the hell was that? And Jared Young, he's not a first baseman. He's trying to learn the position. He's clueless over there. He has no idea what he's doing in terms of trying to knock that ball down. But I don't feel for David Peterson. Don't tell me about soft contact. He walked the first two guys. If he's not walking the first two guys, then the little infield hit by Bohm and the infield hit by Edmundo Sosa isn't going to turn in to two runs for the Phillies. But then you get the second inning. One out, nobody on, gives up a base hit to Bryson Stott, goes another full count, this time to Trey Turner, bounces one up the middle for a base hit, and then Kyle Schwarber unleashes. I mean, Kyle Schwarber did unspeakable things to us over the last few days. I mean, the bombs that he's hitting. And what kills me about Kyle Schwarber, and I know this should not be in my head, I shouldn't think about this, I shouldn't say this, but I'll say it anyway, is that the Philadelphia Phillies, off of a very disappointing ending to their season last year, not quite as disappointing as us, because at least the Phillies made the playoffs, but off a disappointing end to their season, the Philadelphia Philly fans wanted Dave Dombrowski to blow the team up. They wanted Dombrowski to do major things to this team. And he didn't do it. He basically made some changes, but he brought Kyle Schwarber back, and the Phillies are running it back. And after a bad start, they changed the manager, and here they are. The Phillies are making the playoffs. We all know they are. You could hate them as much as you want. They're a playoff team, and they may win the division. Would not stun me if they won the NL East, but they're going to make the playoffs. And they decided to do the exact opposite of what the Mets decided to do. The Mets decided, we're not running it back. We missed the playoffs. Pete Alonso is like a disease, so we need to move away from him as fast as possible. And the Phillies are running it back. And for now, there is a level of success. And Kyle Schwarber's Kyle Schwarber. He's having another monster year. He's hitting a ton of home runs. And he assaulted us over 2 days. And I kept thinking about Alonso and how the Mets decided the exact opposite of that. They decided, we need to get away from these players as fast as possible. And even though the Philly decision to bring all these guys back may not work, they may get knocked out in the wild card round, they may not go anywhere, but their decisions have just worked out so much better than ours. Whether it's the Mets keeping their manager and the Phillies firing theirs, and you see the record difference since, versus what I just talked about with them bringing guys back and the Mets choosing not to. Either way, Saturday night was disgusting. Oh, we're on Sunday now. I forgot. I get off because they're all the same. They're down 5-0 after two innings on Sunday. They're down 3-0 after two innings on Saturday, except they gave up the 8 in the third inning. David Peterson should not start on a functioning Major League Baseball team, but he is. Kodai Senga, who's going to open up the series against Chicago, should not be starting on a functioning Major League Baseball team, but he is. And so David Peterson basically put the Mets out of their misery before you could get comfortable. You did get the Carson Bench home run. That's nice. And you did get opportunities, like two on nobody out in the second inning against Zach Wheeler. Marcus Semien could do something. He didn't. He took an 0-4 in this game. Brett Beatty could do something, but instead he's swinging at the first pitch and fouling one out to Alec Bohm. Francisco Alvarez could do something, but instead he's swinging at the first pitch and grounding out to Alec Bohm. The second inning had a chance to be something for the Mets. It turned into nothing. Juan Soto, look, I don't know why he's trying to go to second base on that two-out single in the third inning. Do I appreciate him hustling? Sure. Do I appreciate him trying to do something? Sure. But he was out by a country mile. Juan Soto should know better. But I think that is a testament to him knowing how bad this team is. Like, maybe he's being extra aggressive because he knows he needs to be extra aggressive. Then you get the sixth inning, where the Mets put together three really good at-bats against Zach Wheeler. Carson Bench drew a walk. Juan Soto drew a walk. Jared Young drew a walk. A.J. Ewing gets ahead of the count and hits one hard. Unfortunately, it's right at Bryce Harper, turns into a fielder's choice. And then Marcus Semien comes up, big opportunity against the right-hander Jonathan Bolin. And what does he do? He strikes out. Marcus Semien had the big two-run triple after he should have struck out. He responded to that by going 0 for his next, let's see, 8, including missing out on some big opportunities. But the Mets had chances. Like in a lot of these games where they give up the runs early, they had chances. They did nothing with it. They went 0 for 7 with runners in scoring position. But this was about David Peterson, and this was about yet another non-competitive start by a Mets starting pitcher. So with all that said, let's pick our net negative before we pick the Rico. I'm the man right now. Hoff, there's so many to choose from. Brett Beatty is an absolutely fair candidate for his garbage throw and his atrocious at-bats. He's great. I'd even nominate Marcus Semien because even after the two-run triple that he had in the first game of the series, he did absolutely nothing offensively. Bo Bichette sucked. I mean, Bo Bichette, I appreciate Bo. He went back-to-back. Rico, I'm the man right now. But here he is getting booed every single time he's up. And outside of a measly two-out, nobody-on single on Saturday night, he had one hit in this series. He was 1-4, let's do the math, 7 plus, 1-for-12 with a double play. He's a great candidate. And obviously, it's tough to knock Freddie Peralta, who gave up 10 runs in 2 2/3 innings. What do you think?
I mean, listen, I kind of want to go Freddie. I really do. And I would love to make a stronger case for Beatty, even though, I mean, he's clearly up there. But I think Freddie Peralta has to. I mean, this is a guy who, at this point in time, we know what he is. But he was brought in to be an ace, and he has done nothing of the sort. We win a game on Thursday. I know there's a day off in between, but we win a game on Thursday. We're just looking for a solid start, something that you know, do the 5 and fly, get us somewhere, keep us in the game. And he gives it away, 10 runs. It was, I mean, you talk about it, that could have given us a series if we had a competitive game on Saturday. It could have.
I agree with you. I agree with you. I want to mention as many people as we can because there are so many people that deserve this. Semien had a bad defensive play. We mentioned Brett Beatty's bad defense and lack of hitting. Bo Bichette no-showed his return to Philadelphia. I know it's not a return, but no, there's a lot of candidates. David Peterson was non-competitive in this start, but I agree with you. Freddie Peralta was acquired to be a top-of-the-rotation arm. And on a Saturday night, national TV against the Phillies, facing another top of the rotation arm in Christopher Sanchez, he didn't even keep him in the game. Like, you know, in David Peterson's case, I said I wasn't going to do this, but he gives up the 5 runs, and then he sort of tries to keep him in the game. This guy let it just lit on fire. So I agree with you. And this is the second Peralta win for him so far as a New York Met. But I think he's got to be the net negative because he made that game as irrelevant as humanly possible after only three innings.
Yeah. And then on top of that, too, like I'm sitting there, I'm in Disney, the greatest place on earth, right? And I'm seeing there on a highlight, Bryce Harper has a cycle in the fifth inning. I'm like, what happened today? What did we just witness? And that's, again, it's all thanks to Freddie Peralta. So that can't happen. Sorry.
Congratulations, Freddie. You are now a two-time winner of the net negative. Let's find the man right now, the star of this series. Mets did win a game. That was on Thursday night, the opener of this weird three-game series. Juan Soto deserves credit. He did hit the two home runs in the game that they won. He was on base two more times in the finale of this series and one more time in the Saturday night game. But I think there is a clear I'm the man right now, a runaway I'm the man right now. And Hoff is confused by it. So I'm just curious, if it's not Juan Soto, and it's not, and I believe there's a runaway winner, who do you think I'm thinking of?
See, I think it's Carson Bench because he hit every game. He had, you know, in the two games they lost, he had home runs. But again, like, they weren't productive. I mean, it was good. He's been performing great. That's the guy that I'm thinking of that stands out. But I don't think it's like – the only reason why I don't think it's a runaway is because he was most productive in games they didn't win, you know. Soto had production in the games they won. Or in the game they won,
I'd say. It is Carson Bench. And I don't think you're giving him enough credit. And I'll give you some examples on why. In the game that they won, he was the one that began the seventh inning rally. It's a tie game in the top of the seventh inning. He gets a base hit. He steals second base. He goes to third on a wild pitch. He's the one who scores on the Eric Wagaman pinch at RBI single. So not only does he get three hits in the opener of this series, the game that they won, three hits. He's the one that got the hit that started the rally in that game. Now let's go to Saturday's game. I know it's a two-run home run in the seventh inning, and they're down 11-1, but what is he supposed to do? Not try. So I'm not giving him bonus points for it. I'm just saying, like, it's 11-0 in the third inning. So I guess we could wipe away every at-bat from the fourth inning on and say it doesn't matter. But he did it, a two-run home run. And then on Sunday's game, in the third inning of a 5-0 game, it's not over. As much as we think it's over, as much as we don't believe in the team, 5-0 third inning, you have time to come back. He hits a home run off Zach Wheeler. So he hits two home runs. He got on base a bunch of times, including a leadoff walk in the sixth inning. That was the rally the Mets put together that got Zach Wheeler out of the game. So he's on base a bunch of times. He hits a couple of home runs. I just don't think there's anyone even close. I mean, Shaw Manaea did a decent job. Luke Weaver was brilliant in the inning he pitched. But I think overall, Carson Bench was just the best player on the field for the Mets. So I think he's the man right now.
AJ Ewing had a good series. I mean, again, nothing too crazy, but solid enough that he has to be an honorable mention. And right now, there's few and far between when you have those guys. So got to at least shout that out.
Congratulations to Carson Bench. He has won his fifth I'm the man right now, which leads the team. So it's amazing to think a guy who had to battle in spring training to make the team, a guy who's a rookie, has won his fifth I'm the man right now. It's his third win in 7 weeks or seven series. So he's been on fire, and he's broken a tie with Bo Bichette, who had won back-to-back Rico I'm the man right now, to move into a tie with Bench for the most won this season. Bench is now pulled ahead, so congratulations, Carson Bench. You are the man right now.
And another thing about Carson, too, I don't know if you saw the stats today, but the splits on his lefty versus righty pitchers, like, he's hitting left-handed pitching like crazy. I mean, that's awesome. That's great to see.
Which leads to this question. Obviously, an unsuccessful road trip. Mets go 2-4. They're back to 9 games under .500. I've used this analogy before. It's an NBA game, and they are trailing in the late second quarter, but they've basically been trailing anywhere between 6 and 11 points, and they just can't break through. They haven't fallen past 11, luckily, but they can't get above the 6. That's where the Mets have been for an extended period of time, and if we're going to play it like an NBA season, it's almost halftime, because they're going to get to game 81, by the end of the week. So it is late second quarter and the game isn't over. Obviously, you can go on a big run and change things, but they just are stuck between trailing by 6 and trailing by 11. But we talk about Benj and how well he's played, and that all has kind of gone with him being moved to the leadoff spot. And it does appear that Francisco Lindor is going to be activated in the next couple of days. The Mets open up a homestand on Monday. They're scheduled to play the Cubs on Monday. There's a lot of rain in the forecast, so I think there's a real chance the game will be canned and there'll be a doubleheader at some point over this week against Chicago. But Lindor is going to be activated. Now, would I give him more rehab time? Probably not, only because the team is in such dire straits. It's not like the guys filling in are playing that well. So even if Lindor struggles upon returning, I still think it's a better option than what they're putting out there. So as much as it concerns me that Lindor is not going to just come back and start hitting, I would still do what they're doing. But lineup-wise, what do you do? Benj has worked in the leadoff spot. They have stuck with this Benj, Bichette, Soto, 1-2-3. And even though the team isn't winning a lot of games, it's working. Up until this series, Bo Bichette's been playing his best baseball. Obviously, Juan Soto is having a statistically really good season. Benj has played well now for a while. So I'll start with you, Hoff. What do you do lineup-wise upon Lindor's return?
Listen, I always think that Lindor is the best leadoff hitter. Well, and let me take that back. Lindor is a great leadoff hitter. That's his spot. That's his role. I think that that's the best way he performs. So if you told me he has to go back to batting leadoff and it's Lindor, Benj, Bichette, Soto, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. Because the one thing about this team right now is 1-3 is good. 4-9 is atrocious. So you got to find some way to lengthen this lineup up. And again, you're not going to push Benj too far back, but I'm okay with him even moving to one slot back. I'm okay.
You know what I would do? And I wouldn't have said this. I definitely wouldn't have said this at the beginning of the year. I'm saying it now because, A, I don't trust that Lindor is going to come back hot. And it's unrealistic to expect that from him either. I mean, it's almost like, dude, play your way back into shape. Give us good defense at shortstop and, you know, be more productive than essentially Brett Beatty or Jared Young or whoever's been DHing, MJ Melendez, Francisco Alvarez. Take your pick on who he's replacing, which I'll get to in a minute. Just be better than that. I'm not expecting you to be a superstar. And so for that reason, I'd hit him cleanup because I wouldn't mess with what's working with Benj. I wouldn't mess with what's worked with Bo Bichette. And obviously Juan Soto cannot bat cleanup. The idea of Juan Soto not batting in the first inning is it's a war crime. Like that would be, it cannot happen. Like there are things I'm open to. That ain't one of them. Juan Soto is batting in the first inning. So I think because those three guys are working right now, and because I can't expect Lindor to come back tearing the cover off the ball, I think I would just insert him into the cleanup spot. That's what I would do upon his return. But he is going to come back soon, and it's go time. Like, I'm not telling you the season isn't over because it's felt over for a month and a half, but you got to win games. You have to start chipping away. They haven't chipped at anything. They've been sitting there in that same spot for a while now. They've got four games against the Cub team that has been so up and down, who's also coming off a rainout on Sunday. They're going to get Shota Imanaga, who they weren't going to get, but because of the rainout, they are going to get. They're going to get Edward Cabrera, who's had this weird season. This is a four-game series. They got to win 3 out of 4. I'm laughing only because I feel like we say this before every homestand and every road trip and every series. Like, oh, they got to win this. They got to win that. Look, I guess I'll keep saying it until it's over. But, yeah, they got a 7-game homestand against Chicago and Philadelphia. They got to do major damage. They're 9 games under 500. Like, at some point, you got to cut into this thing or it's going to be too late. If it isn't already.
Can I tell you something? I did some while you started this, Rico, I did a deep dive of some numbers of the 2024 Mets. And we know how they started. They were 0-5 to start the season off. Or was it 0-4 or 0-5? Whatever it was. They won
0-5.
They won the game in Detroit on the doubleheader. Okay, fine. They ended up being, though, 500 for a little bit. And then by May 29th, they were 11 games under 500. They made up in 26 games, they made up a good 8-game difference or whatever it was, 10-game difference, and they started July 1st. They were 40-41. The only way for the Mets to do that, and think about this, they started April 30th, they were 11 games under 500. They've chipped away 2 games. They're 9 games under 500. The only way for them to get to like 500 or 2 games, they need to win 9 in a row. They need to win. That's not happening.
But that's what they need. I think for a while we were like, hey, just chip it to win 4 out of 6, win 5 out of 7, and you could cut to that deficit. We're about to get to July, and they haven't cut at that deficit at all. So, yeah, you're almost asking at some point they need a long winning streak. I also remember comparing 2024 for a while, saying, here's where they were at this time. If we play that game right now, 77 games in, the Mets right now are 34-43. They're 9 games under 500, 77 games into the season. At the 77-game mark in 2024, the Mets were 38-39. They are way ahead. They now, after being at the 24 pace for a while, and I kept saying, yeah, they're at that pace, but eventually they're going to have to get hot like the 24 team did. They haven't done that because the 24 team was a game under 500 at this point. This team is 9 games under 500, so you could see the significant difference between the two.
Yeah, that's tough, man. Like, and we could sit there and say that, like, there's still 3 months left of the season. I mean, I don't see where the – this is why I don't know where this hot streak is coming from. Even with Lindor, you bring him back, I don't know how he's going to kickstart this team.
Well, let's hope it's against the Chicago Cubs, but I think what makes it so challenging is the pitching right now. They just don't have reliable starters. Kodai Senga is going to take the mound because he has to, just like David Peterson took the mound because he has to. Jonah Tong is not even pitching well in AAA, so they don't have a lot of great options. But they do begin a 4-game series against the Cubs. Keep an eye on the weather because, like I said, Monday, the weather's supposed to be terrible in New York. So I think there's a real chance that game will get banged and there'll be some kind of doubleheader. And then, obviously, 3 games against Philadelphia. Then they head to Toronto. If you're up in Toronto, say hi. I'm going to try to get to the first game in that series at the end of my Niagara Falls trip. By the way, we'll be doing a Rico from Niagara Falls. I'm bringing the equipment with me. I'll try to set up a location for the YouTube audience where you can see the falls behind me after the Mets wrap up their 3-game series against the Phillies next weekend. But if you're new to the Rico, here's the way it works. We always have Rico Bronyas after a series concludes, and we mix in a ton of instant reactions. I'll be going to a bunch of the games against the Chicago Cubs, so make sure you're subscribed because we'll have a couple of drive-home Rico Bronyas over the course of this long 4-game series against the Cubs. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate you subscribing. We appreciate all the interaction. TheRicoB@gmail.com. Thanks for listening to another edition, an unhappy edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.